Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for supporting the show. If you want to check us out on all of our social media platforms, check us out on Twitter at TinfoilHatCast.
On Instagram at TinfoilHatPod.
You can find us on Reddit. It's reddit.com/r/TinfoilHatShow. Or allcomedytshirts.com.
If you have any suggestions for future guests or topics, go ahead and email us at tinfoilhatpod@gmail.com.
Tinfoil hat.
Tinfoil hat.
Hey man, what's the truth there, dog?
Tinfoil hat.
Oh, what the fuck are you guys even talking about?
Are you ready to get your mind blown?
Revolution will be podcasted.
The revolution will be podcasted. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. It is Sam Tripoli. Back in the saddle, you know who I am. You know what I'm here to do. I'm very excited that you guys are joining us today. A lot of amazing things going on in the world of conspiracies. What a time to be alive, you and yours, and me and mine. Obviously, the live shows are killing it. Like we said, you know, Canada sold out. You know, we're going to be out in October. We're going to be at the Philly Punchline for the Tinfoil Comedy Night. Eddie Bravo, myself, and who knows what other guests we're going to get to join us. So go to punchlinephilly.com, grab those tickets now. And then October 14th, we're going to be in my homeland, the 315 and the 607. Come and meet my mother. She will be there. Go to syracusefunnybone.com and grab those tickets to Sunday night. We're going to pack that mother out. Listen to me, Eddie, and my mother talk conspiracies. So come out and get those. And then I forgot to mention October 3rd, I'm at the Brea Improv. It's an evening of Sam Tripoli and his weirdo friends. We have Corey and Chad, the Smash Brothers, George Perez, and Mike Tully. And I'm going to add somebody new to that. We're going to figure it out. But that is the show. Please, I am talking to people about t-shirts. That's going to be happening. The Patreon is rocking. I'm going to put together a YouTube channel just for the Patreon. If you subscribe to that, I'm going to start being able to live stream on Patreon, and that's the goal. Guys, I know it's just me. I promise you we will be putting out killer shows over and over again, so your support is amazing. And part of that support comes from our new sponsors, BetDSI. BetDSI for all your bet needs. Go to BetDSI, use the promo code HAT100, that's right, HAT100, and you can bet on all the stuff coming out. I know you're into conspiracies. I know you love conspiracies. You can maybe bet on, will the lizard people finally come out as bisexual? Who knows? Is the moon hollow? Maybe we can make a bet on that. Did we go to the moon? Who knows? We're going to bet on that. But I also know, as you're in your bunker, in your man cave, with your lady, getting ready for the end of days, you also like to watch a little sports. So check it out. We got college football rocking right now. We got football, NFL going. NBA is about to turn it up. And Major League Baseball, the finals, the playoffs are coming. Probably won't include the St. Louis Cardinals, but definitely the Dodgers will be there for sure. And UFC, full force, Conor McGregor, all that. So if you want to support the show, just go check out BetDSI.com. Use the promo code HAT100 and join us and help support the show. BetDSI is one of the oldest sponsors of my other podcast. They're nice enough to come on here. If we show them that we can show up and rock out, they're going to stay with us, which helps the show grow. Trust me on that. Because I'm going to need some help with certain things on this show, like, you know, putting together graphics and all that stuff. And that will help with the sponsorship money. So help out the show. We support you. All this stuff is available on Instagram, Twitter, and all that stuff. And that's that. So let's get into the show. We have a wonderful show coming up. I'm very blessed. I get hit up a lot of times by a lot of people to do the show. And I try to get to everybody the best I can. But this gentleman was passed on by a friend of mine named Robin. He's part of a really amazing production company here in Hollywood. They're called No Restrictions Entertainment. He works with a great director named, listen to this. Tell me this isn't some weird ass universe at work. He works with a writer and director named Edgar Michael Bravo. Where have we heard that name before? A little Eddie Bravo, different Eddie Bravo. He is a producer. Please welcome, I'm excited to have him on the show, John Paul Rice, everybody.
Hey, pleasure to be here.
Thanks so much for coming in, man. Greatly appreciated. Robin hooked us up. Robin had a really cool website going for a while.
Yep.
But as most things go, and on this show, partnerships sometimes don't go the way you want it to. And then, you know, it is what it is. So
right. She
hooked me up. With you and, you know, in the projects that you've done. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and then a little bit about your production company?
Yeah, so I got involved in feature film producing about 10, 15 years ago. I moved out to L.A. in 2001 after getting an opportunity to work on Remember the Titans as a football player. And I had a great experience with that in the middle of college while I was going into school for business.
Where'd you go to school?
Georgia State University.
Georgia State.
Yep. I was born in Fort Lauderdale and I was raised in Georgia and Kentucky. And then I just went into State College because it was convenient. I also had a full-time job. So my whole job was going to be into business, into sales. And I'd always done theatrical plays as a kid, in addition to playing sports. I wanted to be a Major League Baseball player as a child. And then I always had this other thing of art. And once I got into school, I had an elective course in history of motion cinema. I learned everything from the first film that was ever made in 1895, the doors of the factory opening, going through Orson Welles, Citizen Kane, Casablanca, some of the classics to the modern era. And it inspired me to get back into acting. And because of that, I got the opportunity to be on Remember the Titans. I auditioned for it. I got the part. And then a year later, I was working on independent, you know, movies there in Atlanta and moved out to L.A. after the premiere and got a job in working in a sales finance production company here in L.A. and was mentored by Joseph Drake, who was eventually the executive producer of The Hunger Games, Juno, The Grudge, Harold and Kumar. So I got to learn under him for 4 years. That was like going to school in the film industry. And I met Edgar Michael Bravo, and I read his scripts, and we started going out with his scripts, just cold calling some of the studios. We built a momentum.
And what year was this?
This is around 2002 to 2006 or so.
So in a weird way, you were very much ahead of the time where it's like self-funding, whereas like the internet isn't what it was. The internet now wasn't like that back then.
Right.
You know, so like back when I tell people like, oh man, you know, you don't understand. We used to promote. We used to literally have to hand out flyers to people. So now we have this whole thing where you're like, you're doing crowdsourcing, funding through the internet and all that stuff. You were doing that much earlier. You were kind of like going out with your projects and trying to find your own funding, which probably happened earlier in movies than most other forms of art. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody was really looking to do that in comedy and stuff like that, but probably in movies it was very prevalent. So you were kind of ahead of the game.
Yeah. I mean, it was the financial crash of 2007, 2008 that forced us to have to go to the internet and build an audience for our movies because the industry at that time didn't know what was going to happen and they were consolidating. So we were able to get on all these digital platforms. We became a major hit with our first film. It was based on a true story called 1 Hour Fantasy Girl. Dealt with a young girl who's struggling through Hollywood where she works as a no-sex call girl. She performs any fantasy a man wants as long as there's no sex, no kissing. And it was very provocative.
Kissing is so weird that that's this weird rule.
Like, no kissing on the mouth.
Yeah, it's like Julia Roberts made this rule, and then, like, all of a sudden it just became the rule of law. And, like, you always, you know, it's like, oh, you go to a strip bar, no kiss. It's just, like, this weird rule that seems to be within the prostitution room. It's like, anything goes, but no kissing.
Yeah, I mean, I could understand from a hygiene standpoint, but I think it was interesting that there was these boundaries. And the reason why they would want certain boundaries for control and strength and power, both the power that they're trying to enact on the other person or the power that they're trying to keep or take. And so that movie launched us. It got us on the map. It got us a lot of critical acclaim, reviews. We were a bestseller on Amazon up there with King's Speech, Brokeback Mountain in the top drama category for several months. And then it allowed us to get more attention to do more films. So we made 3 movies out of the gate within 3.5 years. We did a movie on homelessness called The Magic Stone. We did another one on child abuse with Mother's Red Dress. And all of these films, they're not documentaries. So they're narrative features that you would go to the theater to see. They involve you in the narrative of the characters that just so happen to work in these themes and these issues that give people an emotional context to understand what happens to somebody when they go through something like this.
I was expecting a doc when I watched the movie and I saw it was scripted, and I think that's wonderful. And I think that you guys are doing something very important. You're using art to enlighten people on situations, whereas, you know, we're in a city where everything is just almost this push to dumb down. You know, Mitzi Shore used to say, it's like never, ever, like, encourage mediocrity. And not that I'm judging anybody, it's like really hard to even get anything going here. But what we see makes it to the television and sees what makes it to the big screen. And listen, dude, I love the movie Rampage with the fucking Rock. And you could be like, I've just noticed that even the movies that should be bad are kind of like glistening right now. But it's really hard to try to get something made that is does not fit into the narratives in which Hollywood wants to push.
Yeah.
Meaning that, you know, you have a lot of indie flicks that maybe will cover the Holocaust or, you know, blacks rising up against white. And I'm not trying to get political right now, but when you have another kind of narrative that's, I feel, is equally as important, but maybe not something Hollywood wants light shined on, such as sex trafficking and stuff like that, mm-hmm. it's harder to get people behind it.
Yeah.
It's very easy to get funding for political statements that are accepted by the norms. You know, it's like Colin, you know, Kaepernick taking a knee up against, you know, white cop shooting black cops. Well, if you had a story about cops just shooting people, it may not get the funding because the narrative they really like fits this thing. It's like, why do young women, why does it get more traction when the girl that's missing is a young white girl or a white woman over a black woman being kidnapped?
Right.
It's like, why does that emotionally pull a string when they all should pull strings? Why is a white cop shooting a black cop get an emotional, you know, pull emotional strings when it should be cops shooting everybody who's unarmed? Like, that should be the narrative. Mm-hmm. And it's about emotional pulls and all that stuff. And what is cool to bitch about, not cool to bitch about, as you pick some stuff that isn't a sexy topic mm-hmm. to talk about. And in particular, child sex trafficking, which is the movie that you sent me, which is Child's Love, I believe it's
called. A Child's Voice.
Yeah. A Child's Voice.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about that movie?
Yeah, so just in terms of the story, it's a supernatural thriller. It's based on the story of a young homeless teen boy who's a heroin addict. And in the process of shooting up one night, he hears this cry for help from a kid who has been sacrificed in a ritualistic.
That was a hard scene to watch for me because I knew it was a drama, and it's obviously scripted, but It wasn't hard, and that wasn't good. It was hard because I know this shit happened.
Yeah, that's the part that we wanted to put it in the movie because for people who didn't know,
I want you to know that
they were willing to, like, a lot of people after the premiere came up to us. They're like, "Is that really what happens?" I said, "Yes, but here are some things you need to do to, you know, go do your further research." And it's all available out there to find it, and it's not circumstantial, or these are people. We have witnesses, we have survivors today by the dozens. We have books, we have court cases, we have FBI files that we can go through and pour through over decades. You can go back to the Franklin scandal, you can look at Ted Gunderson.
Yes.
You can go to Ronald Bernard today. Yes. You can look at Annette Lucas, who's at 6 years old, was sex trafficked by the elite, as she calls it, in Britain, and she saw a chopping block with blood on it, stains of blood of the other children that were there. This is all documented on YouTube and uploaded, and you can search for it and you can find it. So the conspiracy is either there's a conspiracy of silence, or all of these people who come from different walks of life and backgrounds randomly over several decades, and more so than before today, are coming forward and telling their stories with credibility, and no one is calling them a liar or saying you're a conspiracy theorist. They're just ignoring them. They're not bringing this into the mainstream.
So the silence is deafening in my opinion. You know, the allegedly, like, this one girl's calling out Tom Hanks on, and this is me talking, nobody else, calling him out
Right.
On Twitter. Mm-hmm. And he hasn't said one thing. Who else has been like that? Steven Spielberg has been called out several times and nobody said one thing. And even when I mention it on stage, I hear audible gasps when I mention Tom Hanks. And like, I'm not saying that he is doing it, but this woman's laying down some really hard accusations and she's not pulling back. And he hasn't said anything.
Right.
You know, when I was a young comic, I had this older comic accused me of stealing one of his jokes, and I didn't just sit there and ignore. I called that dude up and I go, dude, what is up? What is up? And I talked to the management. You accuse me of something I didn't do. I'm very quick to defend myself. The silence is deafening. And like when you say these names, it's so hard for people to grasp that this is maybe happening, but there is silence and it's deafening in my opinion.
Well, I mean, if you look at it, every single person, whether they are or not, the moment you put a camera on them and the moment you fill it with a story and a background, it removes itself from the context of who these are as people. And we emotionally identify with them because they're coming into our homes. They're on our TV. They're in front of us. And it's a brand. I mean, this is no different than, let's go in here, but Hillary Clinton, okay? Poor Hillary Clinton. Just a victim of her own success and her accomplishment and her achievement with the Children's Fund and everything that she's done for kids and women, just so happens that every single person that she's ever been associated with is either a child sex predator or somebody involved in child sex trafficking or doing something that's, they're going to prison, they're going to jail, they're doing illegal activities.
Or they're dying,
right. So at some point, you know, you have to disassociate yourself. And totally, and I understand this. Look, I'm not coming down on voters and people because we have been manipulated for decades and conditioned. That's what I'm getting out of all of this. And my journey into this world was, if you had told me this like 3 years ago, I would have said, you're a right-wing nut job conspiracy theorist, Alex Jones, you know, totally, like completely, just would have labeled you immediately. I go, that's not even possible. The idea of any of this is insane. But the reality is that when you look at what has been put over us, and you look at it just from a more objective, observable place, we have poisoning of the ecosystem more than ever before. We have greater income inequality than ever before. We have greater poverty and starvation, human sex trafficking in this world. We have a decline in our ecosystem. We have all of these things in decline, all of these systems in decline. And we have continued to vote for people and put them in positions of power based on the ideas that they were going to fix these things, and yet they have gotten worse. It's not even like, oh, they tried and they didn't do enough. It's that they've gotten worse. And whether that's by design or not, the system itself is not working. It is not working for us. It's not helpful to human beings in this regard. And when we get to children, and we're talking about child sex trafficking of children who are being raped, their bodies are being destroyed beyond all recognition in some cases to the point where,
right,
you know, and then we also have women who can't have reconstructive surgery, that their bodies are so damaged they can never bear children ever again.
For sure, dude. And it's just like, you know, some people, they're just tuning in for the first time hearing this stuff. They should be really shocked. We on the show have been talking about this for so long, and the pushback is unbelievable. Yet they're so quickly to believe that the Catholic Church can do it because they did do it,
right.
And the Penn State or Michigan State, they're so quick to do it. And they're like, but yet when you talk about Hollywood and you talk about Washington D.C., there is this giant pushback to defend people that they've never met before.
Right.
So I remember when, this podcast came about when the last podcast that I had on this feed kind of crashed and burned when me and my co-host had a falling out. We're very good friends. I did stand up at his wedding like a month ago. We're very cool. And the blessing is that, the universe works in strange ways, that that podcast came to an end. Mm-hmm. And, So I was kind of just like, I was always involved in just studying politics, but I saw something going on with Bernie.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw this thing going, okay, Bernie's doing rallies with 40, 50,000 people at them multiple times. And Hillary can't even put even when she has Jay-Z and Beyonce there, cannot even put more than 50, 60 people in this thing. Yeah, I'm seeing poll after poll after poll come out that this woman is winning it. And I knew right there was up. And so I started following people like Lee Camp and Jimmy Dore, who talked about the rigging of the primary that's going on. And they would cite these statistics in these ways, and they would all work out. So that starts happening. And then, for whatever reason, WikiLeaks drops his hammer, and all these emails come out. And I knew that WikiLeaks had this, like there's very few things in life that bat 1,000.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Mother Nature, you're going to eventually die. There's no one that beats this. There's the story of the Asian man in China who lived to 285, but he died at some point, even if that was true or not. Nothing bats 1,000. You got to breathe oxygen or you'll die, and you're eventually... Those are the only things in life. And WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks has batted 1,000. They've been sued a bunch of times, and never once has any of their stories they've had to recant. They've never had to recant any of them. So I knew this about them. So I started reading this stuff, and then we start hearing about like pizza and hot dogs and all this, and Obama ordering $50,000 worth of pizza
or
to
hot
this
dogs.
It doesn't even make any fucking sense, right? So then I just start really like just watching this story, because I knew that like money and power corrupts. I knew that money and power corrupts. So I'm watching this story, and then just this avalanche of information comes out, and it's basically about Comet Ping Pong. This guy walks, and then when I really knew it was real, it was when the kid walks in to Comet Ping Pong with a gun, and all he shoots is the computer that's the hard drive. So I investigate this kid, and then I find out that this kid, his father worked for the Clinton Foundation and the Habitat for Haiti. I read a lot about that. Everybody who what's her name that got arrested?
Laura Silsby.
Silsby.
Right.
Her lawyer also gets arrested
for running a child sex trafficking ring, and they weren't even necessarily lawyers. That's the part of it that they
don't even know that. So then I find out that Comic Ping Pong and the guy who runs Comic Ping Pong, his lawyer, okay, is the guy who owns Besta Pizza, which is right down the street. Their logo is the FBI symbol for boy love.
Right.
Okay, he's in charge of fighting child sex trafficking in Washington, D.C. He is in charge of the government department and battling child sex. I go, why is this guy defending this guy that's been accused of all this horrific shit? And then you realize they all have in common Hillary Clinton. And I was on Mark Maron, and we were talking about it, and I literally go to him, this woman has to be the least lucky human being in the world to be associated with so much darkness. And it's actually sexist to sit there and say that a woman is incapable of this evil. Because when you tell me that, and you go, oh, it's because she's a chicken, I go, well, let's look at all the other first ladies before her and since. How many of them have been accused of anything? Not a lot of them. Not a lot of them, if any of them. I mean, Nancy Reagan got a little shit because they dragged their feet on the AIDS epidemic. That's about it. But every one of them has kind of either been quiet or not, you know, no scandals at all.
Right.
Why is it just this one woman who's consistently being named in scandal after scandal?
Yeah. And the one thing that I learned, there's a great website called Corey Diggs. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but Corey Lynn, she did an article on the Clintons in Haiti going back to 1975. Going back to 1975. When her and Bill, when they were together in Arkansas, went to Haiti for the very first time and participated in a voodoo ceremony where they saw two people, a man and a woman, becomes possessed. One woman bit a head of a chicken off, and the other man, I forgot what he did, but then they came out of it, and she was totally fascinated by that higher power that was able to be exerted. So they continued to go back, but they didn't stop at voodoo. They got into black magic.
Oh, man.
And this is all documented.
The dark arts.
This is all documented in the Haitian papers. Never made its way over to the United States. And Corey reveals this, that we're talking about where they sacrifice kids, drink their blood, and eat their flesh.
Yeah.
And she went there twice, once for his election in 92, and then she went alone, supposedly in 96, during his reelection for the all the scandals that were about to break and whatnot. But that was just so that they have a belief, whether it's true or not in terms of what it actually gives them, they have a belief that by doing these things to children, that it gives them power. And when I line that up with what Ronald Bernard and others who have come forward to talk about, their contempt for human life, the power that the darkness gives them, and the fear in the children, the adrenaline. We talked about andriochrome blood.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, and
the adrenaline in that is like, it's like.
It's like LSD, right? It has properties that'll give them a high.
Yeah.
And what really sickened me, I guess, when you see this is that these people are standing in front of you and they look just like you and I. They got eyes, ears, nose, mouth, and they're talking and they're smiling. And yet this is also going on inside of them. And we're thinking, okay, at some point they're going to break. At some point they'll admit it. At some point, she's a total narcissist. She's never once in the last 2 years ever, you've never seen her with all the available evidence and the feedback that has been given to her about the election loss. I'm just talking about it as an example of a narcissist.
Right.
She has never once even paused or considered or reversed her stance and said, you know what? I accept total blame for this. Now, after having looked at everything, you know, this is indicative of who they are and why they can move forward in that world. I mean, you don't get up. I mean, Julian Assange says it. You don't get in this world of politics and power by being,
a good guy.
Yeah, good guy. I mean, they're either going to turn you or you're going to be turned out. And I've talked to multiple people who have worked in D.C., including one who knows that for a fact that you don't go to any of these cocktail parties outside of the White House because they know that they're going to drug you and they're going to have you wake up next to a boy or a girl that's underage and they've got all the photos and everything at that point to blackmail you and stop you in your tracks.
The initiation, dude. That's what it is. It's an initiation and they do it. And people can't come to grips with this. I mean, these are the people who basically greenlit the largest terrorist attack in it with 9/11. They just sat back. And, you know, she comes from fucking shady shit, dude. Like, her father took over the Chicago mob after they threw Al Capone in jail, if I'm correct, mm-hmm. if that was the gangster. I know there was.
That's correct.
He took over. Like, this whole Clinton body count thing is old gangster, whack off, loose ends type shit.
Yeah.
That she learned. And like, people can't grasp it because of identity politics, because people look at her, they go, that's my mom, that's my grandma. Mm-hmm. My grandma wouldn't do that, or I couldn't do that. I mean, people need to do some investigation and don't look into it trying to find reason not to believe it.
Right.
Look into it going, okay, I'm going to read some stuff by a lot of people who are very credible, who've worked very hard independently. Like, I would trust an independent person over someone who's on the payroll of the military-industrial complex.
Yeah.
Who, like, I mean, like, this whole thing with, I forget the name of the company, but they get busted. They're running ICE. They basically get busted all the time with child sex trafficking. They've been busted before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's a very high up intelligence company. The name is, I know you guys are home. No,
thinking of DynCorp?
DynCorp.
Mm-hmm.
They've been busted more and more.
Yeah.
All the time.
Cynthia McKinney taking on Donald Rumsfeld. You can go and look up on YouTube. It's the first time that anybody had ever really trotted them out in a public square and debated them on it. She, of course, lost her position very quickly.
Yeah, because you know what? You don't get to those meetings. Everyone's, well, why didn't anyone say anything? Because you don't get to those meetings if they think you will say something.
Yeah, this is all a group. These are groups and factions and clans. And I mean, you can go through bloodlines and all that, but I want to, for the people that are still listening that are not believing.
People who've jumped off.
No. I mean, for the people that don't believe this is possible,
Aaron.
Yeah, I want to pose this question. Okay. Take the military industrial complex. Now, you have generals in there and people that are good soldiers, and I believe that there's a portion of them that remember what the professional soldier was, right? Not the interventionalist, the torturer, the Abu Ghraib kind of.
Right.
And you know, you can read Nick Turse's book, Kill Anything That Moves, in about Vietnam, and the My Lai Massacre was a daily occurrence. It's not one time. It was a daily occurrence over there. So we take these young men and women, 18 to 24 years old, and we murder them. We soul murder them. The PTSD actually doesn't come from witnessing this. It's participating in it, watching someone else die in front of you at the hands of your weapon. And then the atrocities of rape and murder and butchering of people. But I just want to pose this question to the audience, is that do you think that the people with all the, even just the last 17 years of war and the bombs and the killings and the murders of innocent women and children on the battlefield, not even in the battlefield, wherever they want to drop a bomb or a drone strike, do you really think that those same individuals who finance that, who plan it, who execute it at the highest levels have a hard line that somewhere, well, yeah, we'll kill women and children, we'll call it collateral damage, but we won't traffic children. We won't we won't murder and ritualistically abuse children, and we have a moral code that we have to aspire to. It's, you know, you really have to do a lot of mental gymnastics to kind of say, yeah, you know, I don't want to that sex with kids, that's bad. Murder of children is bad. Luciferian, you know, ritualistic sacrifice. I mean, that's kind of crazy. But these people over here, they're making shit tons of money,
for
billions
sure.
of dollars to drop bombs. And the other part of the Pentagon program that they don't talk about is the ones where if they run out, or if they don't run out, here's the key. If they don't use all their arsenal within the allotted budget year, they don't get re-upped. They do cuts. So what they'll do is they'll just go on dry runs of bombings just to use that munition.
They ran out of bombs.
In Syria.
Obama ran out of bombs. Chocolate Jesus, the only president, the only president to ever have day one to last day be in war. And you just sit there and you identify him because, you know, goes now that's racist to think that a black man can't be fucking as evil. Anybody in that position, like we say in the show all the time, you put Santa Claus in the role of president, he will be a war criminal in 2 years. I mean, Michelle Obama got hammered by those who fight for truth when she goes, we can't be separating kids, these kids at the borders. We can't separate these kids, even though her husband did it for 8 fucking years and nobody wanted to talk about that. And like these people act like it's a brand, like the world's gone to shit in a year and a half. This is just a continuation. So they talk about, like Michelle Obama's talking about separating kids, but yeah, her husband is carpet bombing with drones, missing their target at 90% clip. 90% clip. You couldn't even play rec basketball if you missed 90% of your shots. But that's what we do, and nobody cares.
Yeah.
Because they can't believe that their guy's doing it. This identity politics bullshit. I don't think it was ever real, but definitely when the Clintons come in, the Koch brothers funded their whole fucking thing to move them. They were the cocaine cowboys,
yep.
And they were fucking funneling coke through Arkansas. They've been accused before of killing 2 boys on the track. The guy who basically came out said, I was there, I watched it happen, and they can't believe it.
Yeah.
They can't believe it. There is a real argument that the worst thing that ever happened to the United States was the Clintons. If it's not the Bushes, it's the Clintons. And they worked together to get rid of the Kennedy family.
Mm-hmm.
The Kennedy dynasty was wiped off the planet by those two groups, from Bush killing JFK Sr. to a good argument that Hillary had something to do with JFK Jr. dying, because a week later, he's running for that. He was running for the seat in New York, leading her in the polls. He dies a week later, she basically announces that she's running for him. So, I mean, like, and you just can't believe it. So individually, these moments mean nothing. But collectively, it leads to something. Like, people have been tried and convicted of murder when they can't find the body and they can't find the gun because there's so much evidence that goes, it's got to be this fucking guy. And you're just sitting there defending people that wouldn't pee on you if you were on fire. You care about these people. They couldn't. They look at you like you're cattle. She, like, dude, the whole thing about this Russian gate is her fucking trying to figure out a way to steal the presidency from whatever you think of Trump is. That's how crazy they are. They actually thought if they found him guilty and he got kicked out, that she would go in. Mike Pence would probably go in. Their whole plan didn't even work because they owe so many people fucking cash. Mm-hmm. And to sit there and act like this isn't happening, the children aren't being, and like this town where we get so sensitive on racism, so sensitive on sexism, so sensitive on anti-Semitism, you know, and homophobia. And those are all great things. Mm-hmm. Yet, if you do a joke about pedophilia, and not just a joke about it, but actually a joke saying, well, you fuck kids, everyone tells you, oh, dude, it's just a joke. Let it go. It's just a fucking joke. Well, you know why? Because no one can spin that into a fucking diversity showcase, a diversity writing job, or nothing like that. That's all it is, man, because they can't use it to help their career, so it's not important. And all we talk about in this town is punching up and punching down and context. And I don't know what more is punching down than the kidnap of foster kids and fucking orphans or kids off the street. They're powerless. A woman who gets sexually assaulted is awful. It's awful. She can go to the cops. She can spray the guy. You know, racism. If I say an N-word to a black guy, he can come up and beat my ass. Kids can't do anything.
No, they're the most defenseless and vulnerable of all of us. And that's not to lessen the struggles of people.
No.
And or the Me Too movement and what it actually means, because there's real grievances there, right? I mean, we know that.
For sure.
Right. But when you're talking about children, I want to bring this point up because this is about the industry too. When the Me Too movement started, I was on kind of working, not with the Bernie Sanders campaign, but I was one of the people that volunteered and went around. So I met a lot of celebrities that were local here that were, you know, doing the marches and that kind of thing. When the Me Too movement started, I was on Facebook with a lot of them, friends of theirs, and they were posting the rallies and what they were going to go do. And this is, you know. And I kind of got a wind that this was a, you know, this is a woman's thing as so far as you agree with this and this is, you know, getting it out, right? And that's right. Okay, fine. But when I suggested to these individuals, and I messaged them personally and I said, and the children, don't forget about the children. This was before I really knew everything. This is a year, 2 years ago. There was pushback. From women who said to me, I know, John, I know. And I didn't really understand that until I started getting into more of what Hollywood was doing in Open Secret, the documentary, and then researching the history. And the child sex abuse in this industry has been going on for decades.
I mean, Shirley Temple, there was all stories about her with that.
And the thing is that here's the thing. What this all goes back to, perpetrators and victims, is child abuse. You don't conjure up these kinds of thoughts. I'm talking about as a perpetrator.
Right.
You do not think in these ways about kids sexually for power or violence or anything over them unless that was done to you as a child in some capacity.
For sure.
This is Hillary Clinton. This is anybody else that has sought power. In reality, of the structure that has been built in every single industry across the board. So when we have Hollywood, are there good people that work in Hollywood? Of course there are.
There's good people at the CIA. There's good people at the FBI. There's wonderful cops.
Right,
I have a
but they're powerless. They're powerless. The people at the very top, and these are people who are not financed just by their own fortunes. These are people who are backed by other areas within our government that are very dark. And they
Operation Mockingbird.
Look, the thing is that when you are tempted with money and power at an unlimited level, and there is a DA and a police department and an entire system that will enable you, you're going to get very bad outcomes when you encourage this. When you take artists, and I'm an artist. I come from an artist background. Right. I understand that my journey in life is not because I was raised by a loving mother and father, but because I had deficiencies in that area. And there were other people that came in and helped me and closed that gap and gave me an opportunity to be where I am today. But what we need to understand is that here in Hollywood, you have a lot of people that are seeking something. outside of just the arts.
Right.
There's fame, there's money, there's power.
Right.
There's all that attracts them to leave home, to leave their families and their friends behind and go somewhere else to seek something. Many of those people, and I have met thousands of them in my time here, have been traumatized by something in their life. And it affects the reality of the way they see things. It even affected the way I saw things. And things that I didn't even really think about at the time that were really inappropriate. I'm just not like a gesture or a touch, but shit that I heard. You know, things that were said to me. The disgusting nature of people in this town. Not all of them, but among a certain group. And they all seem to find each other. And they all seem to work together. And they'll talk lovingly about each other in ways that you and I would, you know, if we got to know each other and had a beer, say, Sam's a great guy. I love him to death. And that is true for them. That's the reality. But this world out here is a fertile ground for predators.
For sure.
Fertile. And the reason why is because you have people that are coming from backgrounds where they don't have the structure and the stability emotionally and mentally. And that's not their fault. What you want to do is you want to create a system where we respect the artist, where we love the artist, and we want them to create their art and tell it honestly. You can't do it with these people who are running around doing this shit to kids and abusing women and expect them to change. It's incapable of doing it. Hollywood is incapable of reforming itself. The only way that they're ever going to do it is to kick all of these MFers out.
Yeah.
Lifetime ban, go to jail, take all of their residuals for the future going forward, and just leave them the, you know, the non-essential or the essential stuff that they need, whatever. But you take all of that and you put those into funds. You put those into funds for victims. You use treatment programs. You give people opportunities back to them.
Right.
Because that life was stolen. This is about soul murder of kids, bar none. There has to be hard lines. I don't give a crap if you're a conservative, a liberal, a progressive, a green, and independent.
Right.
This is a human rights issue, and it's one issue that we need to unite upon. It is not a political issue.
I couldn't agree with you more. You know, when growing up, you know, you'd always see these child actors, and they would get these shows, and then they would just become train wrecks, like drug addict train. It was almost a running joke, like, oh, why are you putting your kids in those? They're gonna be drug addicts. And then you realize as you study this stuff, oh, they're traumatized. They've been passed around, used and abused, and they're dealing with it through drugs and alcohol. And that's why it's such a crash and burn. And you know, the girl from Different Strokes, everyone used to make fun of her, man. Oh, she's such a fucking train wreck. Ha, 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 ha. And she dies of an overdose. She's like, oh, because she probably was fucking abused so badly that she couldn't deal with it, man. Right. And it's like, well, I don't know why people think we have something to gain from this. This isn't something I enjoy. I enjoy talking about because I'm shedding light on it, but I wish it was an issue that could be solved and go away. And it's like everybody cares about the children until it's like it's time to really care about the kids, man.
Right.
And it's at the highest fucking levels. And if you think that why doesn't somebody just come forward? They do, and nobody does anything. Let's take a look at Allison Mack and the NXIVM cult right now.
Yeah.
How the news just keeps reporting that she's been accused of sex trafficking. No, she hasn't. She's been accused of child sex trafficking.
Yes.
And they won't talk about it.
Yeah, the Rainbow Culture Center. That's what everybody should be looking at, because those centers are all over the world in all the major cities, and they're all tied to NXIVM. They got funding. This is the part on Frank Report, if anybody wants to go.
Are you talking about stuff you see like on Santa Monica Boulevard? I've seen like, I thought I saw a Rainbow Center.
I'm not talking about
that in particular.
There is one here, and there's one in Miami, and they have one in, I think, London, and there's one in Tokyo. But the point being is that all of these operations, almost always, including Jerry Sandusky with the Second Mile, which, lo and behold, as soon as the Paterno thing came out, well, I don't know, they shuttered that thing immediately. And what they found out was that Sandusky, along with the board, was pimping out children to each other. And they shuttered that charity immediately. And so what these a-holes have done is they are a direct threat to humanity, period. because there is no stopping them, there is no reforming, and there is no changing them. One of the things that I try to talk about, and I don't try to make it personal, I try to let it be where people need to understand what is actually happening. Our way that we can counter this, you can yell into the void all day, and we can call out names, and we can launch campaigns online, hashtags, whatever. It's not going to do any good to solve this problem, because we're going to be dealing with the social ills of this creation of these psychopaths that have basically been with us for many, many decades, and they had the power of the media to cover up the crimes. I mean, we know it from the war side, but most people don't know about the child sex trafficking that's been going on over in Britain, and how the New York Times owner,
Jimmy Savile?
Yeah, Jimmy Savile. And then that same guy who presided over the cover up of that goes over to the New York Times. Right. So how do you reward people like that? Why do you reward people like that with another job and a position of power after they totally messed up? And there's evidence to show that they killed stories and made sure that reports went away. So the reality is this: even if we eradicated all of these people, and I don't mean eradicate in killing, that is not, this is a peaceful drawdown, because I certainly don't want anybody to take action on this that causes anyone harm. But the realities are that we're going to need to be dealing with child abuse in the final analysis of all of this. And that involves what we can do in our families when we see abuse happen, when we have someone such as a brother or sister that comes forward and tells us, you know, that dad touched them and did worse to them inappropriately, and they blacked out and they have DID, you know, dissociative disorder. I mean, these are things that people don't conjure up. Human beings that are loved and cared for do not conjure up such horrific ideas about things. I mean, have there been people that have lied? Of course there have. But you should even ask, why would they feel compelled to lie to get attention for something like that? This is not human behavior. The same way that, you know, we talk about all these social issues and how they have to fit and check off certain boxes. That is almost by design to keep us attacking each other. That there's, you know, that somehow racism is rising and it's popular and it's spreading. You know, you have to be a really cynical person to believe that people can hear a dog whistle and all of a sudden be turned on by it and change their mind or how they were raised as a child, as in a loving, secure home where you're rational and creative and loving in your ideas, that somehow I can be corrupted just because I hear something and then be drawn to it and then let that take hold of me when I have no previous experience with it ever before. So what we're doing is we're treating the symptoms, and we're not going to the root cause. And, right. and this comes from a lady years ago who worked for CASA, which is a wonderful organization, at least in their intent, which was to try to take kids that are in, I mean, we're talking parents who are meth addicts and violent. And they have to like pick between the grandma who's suffering from dementia and the uncle who's an alcoholic as a place for this kid to land. But what the truth be told is that she said, you know, these kids are going over the waterfall, and we're trying to save them from going over the waterfall, which is noble and it's very good. But at some point, we need to go upstream and try to figure out and stop the person who keeps throwing them into the river before they go over to the waterfall.
I couldn't agree. We talked, you know, you did a story about, you have a movie about homelessness. I mean, there's a good chance a lot of these people who are homeless, in particular Los Angeles, like in the last, 5 years, it's increased by 70%, I've heard. I think that around the country, people basically put their mentally ill on a fucking bus and send them out to Southern Cal because it's warm and they want to take care of them. And I 100% believe that. But they talk about a lot of these kids are basically, they're the abused ones. They age out and they just throw them on, you know, for some reason they don't kill them, thank God, and they throw them onto the street and they're there to suffer. There, but for the grace of God, go I. For me, man, it's like I can't control a lot of things in my life, so I really just control how I see the world and how I treat the world and how I treat others. And I had a bad drug problem, man. I fight it all the time. And I could easily be that guy on the street with no love and no nothing. So I got a couple bucks. I handed to him. It's what it's all about. This shit is 100% real. And I don't know why we don't see a pushback. And you always talk, you were just talking about, I want to get back to this thought I had about how, you know, we live in this world where everybody thinks racism is on the rise. And I don't see it. I don't see homophobia on the rise, man. You go, you do a really hard joke about gay people. I hear, no matter where you are, red state, blues, a hard like, hey, dude, not cool. You know, not that I do those jokes, but you see it happen, man. I think people are way more educated. And, you know, it's like, I'm going to say something, man. A fucking inner city gangbanger and a Ku Klux Klan guy have a lot more in common than anybody wants me. Because they're basically, they're in their position because economically, they're trying to figure out what the fuck is going on in their life and how to explain where they fucking are. And yes, gangbangers have been the result of fucking institutional racism.
Yes.
But this whole like thing about NAFTA and free trade taking all these jobs away from the rural area, red states, all this stuff, and these guys are stuck with nothing and they want to blame somebody. So in the news we hear them blame the Mexican and all that. They're just trying to figure out why the fuck they are where they are. And if they actually sat down and had a conversation, they would realize they have way more in common. And I'm not trying to condone racism or Ku Klux Klan. I'm just saying if you sat there and had a real conversation with these people on why they are the most hardened gangbanger, the most hardened Klan guy, why are you there? It's like, dude, I got nothing going on in my life. I have no hope for the fucking future. I'm just trying to fucking survive. And it sounds really awful, but it's just the truth, man. And you have all these, and I just want to get to this point, these opportunists who seize these moments and use them for them all. I'm going to say it myself, that Khalil Bell or Kwame Bell or whatever his name is, who just put out a special that said, a fucking private school Negro. I mean, you went to a private school, dude? You went to a private school? And you're sitting here talking about how hard you fucking have it, man? Go to upstate New York where I'm from, okay? Kids get dropped off. No shower, no clean clothes, dirty underwear, no fucking food, no nothing. And you went to a private school? And you're telling me you're fucking, you got work? I mean, it's identity politics, man.
Yeah.
Been pulled over 20 times. Not saying there's not racism, man. What I'm saying is like we are more alike than we are different.
Yes.
And we fight over these things. It's done on purpose.
Yeah. And I mean, if you're looking at it, it's a replay of, I don't know, 40, 50 years. We've been kind of going through these cycles and we keep talking about, and it's like, you know, anybody who acts quote racist today, I mean, try to go outside and say something verbal or act a certain way, you're going to be called out for it immediately. It's not popular. And you got to ask yourself, I mean, in reality, so, you know, I didn't pay much attention to this, but when there was that, you know, the meme going around about that woman who called, you know, the police on the black family that was picnicking or whatever. Okay. That involved her and them, but social media and the media made it about millions of people. And so you ask yourself, who's the bigger race baiter? Who's the biggest race baiter out there? It's the media.
For sure.
I mean, they promote this crap on a level that you would think I would be walking outside and I'd be seeing all sorts of crap going down and people putting white only signs up there. Sure, I grew up in the South. I went to a school with a kid who was whose father was a Grand Wizard in the KKK. And when you open the, you know, the thing, it said, be prepared and all that shit. And it's like, and he was a brilliant kid and he seemed like a really sweet, nice kid. But at the end of the day, is that idea taking hold and root in people? In the masses, by tens of millions, such to the point. And when you look at what the media is doing, and I fear, this is what I fear, because you have the combination of all these social ills, and we're not talking about the ones that the media checks off. It's the real life stuff, the real destruction of humanity that has been allowed to persist, not because it's our fault, but because we're sold a vision and an idea and a system that we need to move up in and everybody's struggling. It's basically to hold you down.
For sure.
So that you don't fall one rung lower on the ladder than the next guy. So the idea that I can't deal with that, I got to just keep plotting ahead. This is what they've been doing and they're very successful at. So what I would say to people is this, look, get out and start talking to your neighbor. Start talking about these issues. Watch JFK to 9/11, Everything is a Rich Man's Trick. It's a fantastic documentary. Go on and look at Agnete Lucas talking about age 6 when she was trafficked by the elite and the executions that she witnessed of children and the blood that she saw on that butcher block that she was about to be murdered from, and somebody on the inside happened to care for her just enough that she could get out so she could tell her story. You look at all these different, there is so much information out there. You have to be willfully ignorant at this point. But the biggest problem that I see coming, and I'm mostly concerned about it, which has made me buy a gun. Never in my life would I think I would have a gun and be, you know.
I'm pro-gun.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. You have the press for the last 2 years who has stroked enormous fear in the lives of millions of people in this country. And when you factor in the fact that we have a fifth of our country on antidepressants.
All done on purpose.
Yeah,
dude.
All of this is to create the powder keg that is needed to bring society to its knees.
For sure.
So that you have a police state.
For sure, dude.
And if you don't address these issues, if you don't start loving your kids, if you don't start loving your family and the people around you who deserve that, who have earned that with you, and working together to try to find solutions. Let me just say this. Any idea that you and I have is better than any of these motherfuckers who have been in power for years. No matter how insignificant anybody thinks that, you know, it's stupid. I want everybody to watch John Rappaport in a 2014 presentation they did on mind control. It sounds like, you know, something weird. But what he goes into is he's talking about the Matrix. The Matrix is this illusion of reality.
I totally believe in it.
And it's not anything mystical. It's just what has been constructed, the world that has been presented to us, and thinking that this is how life is, and this is how Donald Trump, for better or worse, blew a hole into reality.
It's real, right? The fight between him and the deep state is real, right?
It's absolutely
real. It's not business as usual.
You would have to believe that he's risking his life and that all of this charade that's going on to try to get him out of office, to stop him, to bring him down, is a coordinated effort because he's playing on their team.
And it doesn't make any sense what they're doing because the CIA's, the FBI's in shambles right now. I mean, they're still working, but it's like two directors have stepped down. One director, the CIA's had his fucking clearance stripped. I mean, the mass media, nobody's watching corporate media. I mean, like, these are their tools that they've set up. It makes no sense. Now, am I saying that he's not doing the, you know, military industrial complex game? And part of me wants to believe, because he keeps talking about wanting to pull people out, and then next day, oh, we're going harder. And I think it's
right.
So in that aspect, Donald Trump is business as usual with the military industrial and the bombing of the brown people. But there is something going on between him and the fucking establishment.
And I come from the background of my political awakening, or whatever you want to call it, Michael Rupert and Collapse in 2009. It was this great documentary. Then I looked at, you know, I followed Chomsky and I looked at Hedges and I read Death of the Liberal Class. And I mean, it's playing out to a T, because what you're seeing is essentially all of the institutions, not just the FBI and DOJ, and not these skirmishes and political battles as they're presented to you, but all the institutions that America was founded on and the principles of a republic or a democratic republic have been destroyed, co-opted, or completely turned and corrupted to be weaponized against the people. And the biggest example of that is the surveillance state. And when you look at the tech companies, and the fact that Facebook has a 29,000-point profile on every person, I mean, you know, this is beyond marketing and advertising.
Dude, we talked about this on the show. The LifeLog, a Pentagon program, ends February 4th, 2004. When was Facebook registered? February 4th, 2004. Yes. Snapchat's never made a dollar. Why does it keep fucking going? Oh, it's facial recognition. So now they have all these hot, light-skinned black strippers fucking facial recognitions because they look like fucking bunny rabbits, okay? So it's like, it's all like, to get to the highest level, it's all in on it. I mean, you could sit there and like, okay, the Republicans are awful people. I think both sides suck. But let's take a look at what's going on here. Like the deregulation of media. Who did that? The Clintons. Okay, who passed right before he got out of office a thing that made it legal for the U.S. government to use propaganda against some people? Obama. Mm-hmm. These are real things. So when you bring up that woman who's like, these guys are barbecuing and they're black and get them out, I question whether that's even a real fucking thing.
Right.
Because who's that fucking stupid?
And also, is she the problem?
Yeah.
Is she the big problem that we're all having to stare down
and
right now?
And it just become opportunists who grab it to spin it into, more followers, more people.
It's a dopamine hit.
A dopamine hit. You get in this echo chamber of retweets, you know? Yeah. And you sit down, you talk to people like how many people that you have a real problem with have you sat down and had a real conversation with on why this is? And I would go, hey, Klan guy who hates everybody, have you ever sat down and had a conversation with these fucking people?
Yeah.
No. What have they actually done to you? Nothing. But you've been told from very high up, these people are taking your jobs, they're rapists, they're all these people, and they're not at all.
No.
They just want to pay their fucking, they just want to make a dollar, feed their family, have a drink, and get laid once in a while. Just like, that's why I've the rest of the world is, but there's these power elites that just fucking turn us, and it's dark arts. You know, I always get talk. We've been doing nothing but banker wars. Oh, Jews! It's not Jews. It's not Muslims. It's not fucking Christians or Catholics. It's dark arts. Okay, you got the Jesuits, the Khazarians, the Luciferians, and all. They use Jews, Muslims, and Christian faiths as masks to walk amongst us. Mm-hmm. They don't believe in any of that dog shit. They wouldn't pee on somebody of their own religion to save their fucking life.
Yeah.
It's the truth, man.
Yeah. No, I mean, from Bernie Sanders' campaign to now, it's...
You saw data or something? You saw something happen that was very... Can you get into that a little
bit?
Yeah,
so during the Democratic primary, I was pretty active. I saw Bernie Sanders in a rally in Wisconsin, online, in July of 2015, and I was pulled in. I had seen him a couple times on, you know, TV, whatever. But I got to following, and I donated. I mean, I donated like 70, 80 times.
Me too.
But the main thing was that I paid really close attention to everything. And my background is in business systems analyst. So I've been doing that for about 12 years. And I saw signs that were, like, I was looking at the polls. And so you don't just take the percentages, but you look at the devil in the details, and you start breaking those down into, I mean, you know, you start talking to math beyond 1 + 1 to people, and then you got to divide, and they're like, oh, you know, okay.
Right.
So basically what I did is I found that the polls were completely rigged, completely. And then next, that the results, when I was reading these reports of one guy who had sat in 25 years of political campaigns all over the world, he says, I've never seen anything like this in my 25 years. This is a meteoric rise, like Facebook growth. And this was after the first Super Tuesday. Anyway, I started documenting some of these things, and then people were bringing up anomalies and votes disappearing and this, that, and the other. So I finally started my own kind of thing and went back and got New York's Board of Elections data, the raw data, and I started working with a coder in Japan who was writing a code that would download all of the real-time results as they're reported on the website. So all of the chain of command is, you know, Board of Elections maybe sends it over to the AP. The AP then publishes it out. And that's why you see, like, New York Times and CNN and everything and Huffington Post, like, almost updating almost at the same time or relatively, like, the same results. And so what we did was we downloaded those every 10 seconds on a repeater. So we got a lot of same results, but we were also able to detect anomalies where votes were missing. And in my analysis, I did New York first. So Bernie Sanders wins 79-80% of all the counties in New York comparatively to Obama in 2008, which he only won, supposedly won. And the same amount of votes were cast, 1.8 to 1.9 million in the final analysis of everything. Now, we know about the purge and all that kind of stuff, but what's really remarkable is that the turnout among the state where Bernie won was at minimum 45 and upwards of 56% turnout of registered voters in each of those counties. When you go into Clinton's and the ones that she won, we're talking about a drop-off of 10% voter turnout, but when you get to New York City, it's less than 30%. And what we recorded, and we did it by district, and we ran it against a code, and we lined it all up on a timeline, we saw between 10:54 p.m. and about 12:15, 1.4 million votes were removed. Now, the argument was, oh, well, it was put back. No, it wasn't. If you have these results coming in, you're just changing them out for the next group that's coming in, so you can always keep it down. And they're doing it within like seconds of each other, so you can't detect it. But, well, there's like, but what was crazy about all of this is that it wasn't the state. It was just across all of the districts in New York City. And what we also saw was in some of these returns where Bernie won. But we're talking like a swing from her having 57%, all of a sudden him going to 62%. I mean, just like in the next return. We saw this in Oregon. Oregon, he won in a landslide. And the reason why I know that is because when we did the analysis on that, it was like almost, he was way ahead. And then she came and it like evened. And then he pulled out at the end. In order to pull away, you have to have more, you know, at the very end. It's like if you start out your class with an F.
Right.
Okay, an A is only going to get you a C.
Right.
Right? So you have to make up more as you go and as you accumulate.
You have to have a super A.
Right, right, right. So anything in that last 20 to 30%.
So she has an F, he has a B. For her to get to the B, she has to have like a monster A that doesn't exist.
Right, right. So, but then here's the thing. I also did the post-day counting, which was the provisionals or the mail-ins in Oregon. With Oregon, he won 68% with those mail-ins. In California.
Oh, dude, don't even get me
started. That was the monster of all frauds. I mean, we're talking about, we've got the machines, we've got the provisionals, we've got the voter list. This is all to sculpt an electorate so you have a predictable outcome that doesn't overcome the machines, right? Because the machines are calibrated and set based on previous expectations of voter turnout.
Wow.
This is how they do this. And Bev Harris is perfect. She's great black box voting. She's been around for well over a decade. She talks about fractional votes. She shows how the machines are. I mean, everybody knows this stuff, but we kind of all play in this like this world. We're arguing over rigged elections. And this has been going on for decades. This is not something new. This goes back when Ross Perot scared the holy hell shit out of Bush and them. I'm sure he won states.
Yeah.
I mean, people believe that he won the debates. I mean, these are focus groups. This is all
dude, everything he said in that in that Al Gore
NAFTA.
Yeah. He was all right.
Yeah.
He told us when he was on Larry King. And Al Gore looked us in the eye and lied right to our faces. And that's why when people, and I know you and I both believe in environmentalism and all that stuff, mm-hmm. but when people go, the environment, all that shit's bullshit. Al Gore's full of shit. That's why. Because when he had a chance to stop the Florida thing and he could have done an investigation, he chose not to.
Right.
When he was on Larry King, he lied right to us. You know, he has no credit. His daughter married a Rothschild. I mean, like, I don't know how many stripes you fucking need, man.
Well, I want to say this because I went to Bernie directly. And I went to Jane directly, and I presented the results. Now, I didn't get any response from it. That's fine.
That's a weird thing, too.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that politics is a very dangerous game. I mean, it is. In the United States, especially. And not just because of Hillary Clinton. Because of the structures of power in D.C. and beyond that call all this. This is all coming from, you know, we could talk about the Bank of London all day, but the realities are that she lost in such a grand fashion in the primary. I'm talking about like, we're not even scratching. This is not even a close race. We're talking about 60% of the votes going all the way back to Iowa in his favor. And you look at the fundraising. He out-fundraised her, even with the Hillary Victory Fund of the $84 million injected illegally into her campaign.
Some foreign country, right?
But with $84 million still padding, he out-fundraised her by over $100 million. And when you ask yourself, okay, well, you know, it's a silent majority. Not everybody should, you know, caucuses are the most democratic process because it's the hardest to rig.
Oh, yeah, because it's just like, you got to raise your hand, right?
Yeah. They can still manipulate it, but they can't do the kinds of things that you need to do with the visuals.
Right.
But all in all, what I wanted to say is this. We don't live in a democracy. We don't live in a republic. What we have to start doing is working together, and we have to coalesce around these ideas that it's to fight this system is never going to win. We're never going to win fighting the system. What we have to do is we have to rebuild in another direction,
right,
with our ideas and our imaginations. And the first step is that we all agree that no one, no matter what level of power you ascend to, Eric Schneiderman and what he did is not an anomaly. These are people who are criminal.
Yes.
They have criminal minds, and they're criminals in costume playing politicians. Those are the powerless people. They're actually the servant class. And everything else up above them, though, is the gravy train. That's where they get their power, because they are all here for theater to keep us contained and fighting amongst each other. And the moment we say no more, it does end for them. It really does. We can actually divest our power from them.
It's so interesting because they've created a system in which, at the end of the day, they don't control, meaning they've created a system where the world economy runs off the United States buying everything,
yes,
right?
Debt. Yeah.
So if that population fuck bucks and says, kiss our ass, they can't do anything about it because it's the system they set up. After 9-11, when George Bush was like, hey, man, just go out to movie theaters, fucking, you know, buy stuff. That was because the economy had gone boom, and then nobody was buying it. Nobody's leaving their house. And then the whole thing was about to crash and burn.
Yep.
And so at the end of the day, yeah, they run everything, but they are slaves to us buying everything.
Yes.
And if we go no more, they're going to have to play ball. And just know this, man. You sit there and you openly know these guys that you are elected. They're lying to you. It's like when guys try to get laid with women. They say whatever they want, whatever we think the chick wants to hear, so we could get laid. Whether that's right or wrong, that's the game that's been played forever, right? I used to do jokes about it, right? And then what happens? We elect these guys knowing they're lying to us. And then they get in, they don't give a shit about us. But when people like you, me, Jimmy Dore, Lee Camp sit out there and go, hey, they're lying to us, people push back. Oh, stop it.
Yeah. That's my guy.
Yeah.
That's my lady.
Why would they lie to you? You know they're lying. They, like, politicians are known as liars. And yet when we call them liars, you push back so hard on us, man. Well, dude, I could have you on 1,000 times.
I'd love to be on your
I'm gonna pitch you to Jimmy Dore. I don't know if he'll take my recommendation, but I think this voter stuff is so good. I think he would love to hear what you have to say about it. Again, he's John Paul Rice. He's with the company No Restrictions Entertainment. Where can they find all your stuff?
If they go to norestrictionsent.com, it'll pull you over to A Child's Voice, which is the latest film. We're also on Amazon and, Vimeo. You can look up all of our titles under Edgar Michael Bravo or No Restrictions Entertainment. You can find our films there. We're also on Prime, so if you're a Prime member, you can watch our movies for free. But the main thing we want to get out is that these are movies that deal with social issues. They're rarely addressed issues in Hollywood. And the way that we show them is not with an agenda other than the truth. And we hope that what we need to do, if you buy our movie or you download it, show it to as many people as you can. We need to wake up as many people as we can about what's going on in the world. Because at the end of the day, this is our future. If we believe kids are our future, we've got to save as many kids as we can, and we got to love the rest of them to make sure that they grow up to be healthy, loving people that are not subject to these predators.
You know what, man? You want to prove me wrong? Call for an investigation. Call for an investigation of these people. Prove me wrong. If I would love to be proven wrong. I would love to be like, Sam, they did a thorough investigation, and you're full shit. And I will come on here and apologize. But I know they won't. I mean, the LA Sheriff badge has the fucking pedophile symbol in it all over it. I mean, it's at the highest levels, dude. I mean, it's just, if you don't think the system's corrupted, why do you think they do lifetime appointments of judges? They get these guys in and they sit there for fucking ever. And it fucking sucks. And it's all real. And I know these things, sometimes these episodes get you sad. Again, let's go back and control what we can control.
Yeah.
How we see people. How we let people like John McCain, who've done horrible things to the rest of the world, when he passes away, or was put to death, depending on who you're talking to, okay? Right? When this guy passes, don't let them paint him as a war hero. Don't let them say what a great American he was, because we know he wasn't. And that's me talking, okay? If you got a problem with that, get with me. I sit there and I can only control certain things. How I see people, how I remember people, and how I interact with the world around me. Be nice to others. Do 3 things a day nice for other people, not expecting stuff back. And see how much your world changes. When you help for the sake of help, don't judge people. You don't know where they come. Some people are literally born to a world of shit, and it ain't black, and it ain't white, and it ain't nothing. It's rich versus poor. And if you don't think that, you're blinded. It's the truth. Love everybody. My friend, you kicked a whole lot of ass. We'll have you back very soon. I love you guys, and we will see you soon for sure. Hold on. See if I can play this. Play the song. Goodbye, everybody. Thanks for your support. I love you guys very much. Check out BetDSI.com.